Hello and welcome to Growing Up B2B. I'm Ed D'Elia, president of D'Elia Associates, the place where B2B brands go to grow. For over 60 years, and now across two generations, we've been helping B2B companies achieve next level growth through brand distinction, quality lead generation, and sales enablement. Growing Up B2B was created for family business leaders who are passionate about growth, legacy, and making a lasting impact. Whether it's a multi-generational legacy or multiple family members working together, there's something truly magical about blending business with family. And we want to celebrate that right here on Growing Up B2B. So be sure to stick around to the end of the show and find out how you can be our next guest. Okay, let's get into it. Hello and welcome to another episode of Growing Up B2B. I'm your host, Ed D'Elia. I'm the second generation president of D'Elia Associates, the place where family B2B brands go to grow. Today, I'm joined by Steve Holland, president of My Case Builder. My Case Builder is a family-founded business that traces its roots back four decades when Steve's father began working with foam fabrication and protective packaging back in 1986. What started as a small operation cutting and gluing foam has evolved into a specialized manufacturing company serving customers who need custom protective solutions for equipment, tools, electronics, and mission-critical gear. Steve joined the business in the early 90s and eventually took the reins in 1997. Since then, he has guided the company through multiple phases of growth, including acquisitions, facility expansion, and the development of My Case Builder as a recognizable name in the custom case and foam industry. Recently, the company has entered into an exciting new chapter, acquiring two companies in the past year, and exploring additional opportunities that could expand the company's geographic footprint further. Adding another generational layer, Steve's daughter Sarah has joined the company as part of the third generation. Steve, welcome to Growing Up B2B.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Great to be with you today. So let's start at the beginning. Your father began in the foam business in 1986. So if you look back, what are some of your early recollections of those days with the company? What were some of your earliest recollections of seeing what your dad was up to?
Oh, yeah. So, yeah, he started January 1986, and already in June of 1986, after I sophomore in high school, so for the summer break, I was already cutting foam, I was already gluing foam, and working in the factory in 1986. And then after I graduated as well, before I went off to college, I also worked in the factory summer as well, and it was interesting. In manufacturing, I'm from the suburbs of New York. Don't really go to many manufacturing plants as a youngster, but so I was actually learning a lot about not only the process but the people. They had one employee, so just how it all got done was fascinating to me.
Yeah. And at that age, was it voluntary, or was it more or less expected that this is what you do with your summertime?
It was voluntary.
Okay, cool.
I wanted to come in. My brother also worked in the business as well.
Okay.
He was helping my dad out, but yeah, it was a necessary help to my father.
Okay, got it. So you joined the business a little bit more officially, because I'll call those early years as unofficial. Mm-hmm. In the early 90s, after a few years of what you described as being, to use your words, a snowboard bum, which is no discredit there. I'm a feeble snowboard bum myself, probably not as capable as you are. But when you came back in the 90s, did you think that was temporary, or were you already starting to think about being part of something, building something long term at that stage?
It's a good question, meaning that I've always had an entrepreneurial spirit. So, I had not a lemonade stand, but I sold baseball cards on the side of the road when I was, 8, 9 years old. My brother, when he was in college, he had an ice cream cart, and I said, why don't we buy 10 ice cream carts and just, rent them to all your friends kind of thing. So I always knew that I wanted to be in business, but never took a business class. I went to school for computers. So when I joined, I was actually working at the factory part-time, and then I was also doing computer programming as well.
Okay.
So I really wasn't sure whether you know, it could have gone in those two directions. It was right at the beginning of the dot-com boom. I probably should have went to the dot-com boom, but that's a story for another. but it could have gone either way at that point.
Well, hey, a lot of those companies aren't around, but my case builder still is. So, you know, I feel like maybe you've made the right call.
I did make the right call. Yes, absolutely.
So to touch on something that was probably a rather harrowing moment in your family's history, in 97, as I understand, your dad had a heart attack.
Yeah.
And then suddenly you found yourself needing to step up and more or less step into leadership. Can you bring us back to that moment, Steve, if you wouldn't, talk about what that was like and what that moment really taught you about responsibility, leadership, ownership? Just bring us back there, if you would.
Absolutely. Yeah, so he was coming back from Florida. He was on a week vacation. And when the plane landed, he was said to my mother, I need to go to the hospital. And he would never go to a doctor. So we knew something was wrong. So she rushed him there. And basically, we didn't know, obviously, what was going to happen. He turned out to be, okay. It was, it wasn't, obviously, it wasn't life changing or dying. Yeah. No, he's still alive. He's 91, 92. He's still going strong. But for me, the key was is that that really made my decision. Computers or foam and cases into a reality. Because we only had two employees at the time. It was really a very small business. It really wasn't making even enough money for me to live. My wife was making a good amount of money. So I really, at that point, I had a decision to make, okay? Mm-hmm. Do I keep going? Do I take over? What can I make of this? Small little place with one employee, two employees? Or do I invest myself and take it over from my dad? And we decided that he would retire, he didn't need the stress, and that I would take over completely. And so we did. We made that decision within about 2-3 weeks after the incident, and took over in January of 97.
Wow. So if you look back and you look back at the journey up to that moment, do you feel that you chose the business or did the business choose you?
I feel a little bit of both.
Okay.
I always wanted to be in business. So even when I was doing my computer programming, I had my own program that I was outselling. You know, so it was always an entrepreneur. I knew that I would do something. This was a vehicle for it. And the interesting thing about this business is that when I came in, I computerized the business. My first website I developed in 1994, so I created websites for the business. So I had the passion to modernize, get equipment, and at the same time, in 1999, my daughter was born in 1998, and she now works with me. But I did have that decision to make at that point because we were growing a little bit too much for our warehouse, and we needed to get a new one, and I was going to buy a building, and I really had that decision to make. Do I go full time now? Do I try to make go of this? Again, we still weren't really a big company, and I decided at that point I would. So I guess it was chosen for me at the beginning, and then I chose it after that.
So if you could walk that out a little further, what was it that ultimately said, yes, clearly you had different paths that you could have gone still at that point, right? So right. What was the tipping point that said, all right, I'm going to do this and I'm going all in? Because once you went all in, based on the trajectory, you were all in. So, you know, what was it that really kind of made you realize this is the path?
I would say probably familiarity, okay? Mm-hmm. So my dad had been in the foam business since 1962. So I grew up with foam. There was no spring mattresses allowed in my house. I slept on foam. I played with foam. We gave foam out as giveaways to my friends when I was 8 years old, you know. And then when my dad started in 1986, his own small little foam fabrication company, I really had the familiarity. It felt like home, I guess you could say, right? It was, you know, there's no place like foam. So it felt a little homey. And I would guess that's the answer. The answer is I knew that I wanted to be in business. I knew that I could make something of it. I knew that I wanted to grow and I had the abilities to do it using technology and what I had learned, you know, in college mm-hmm. and throughout the years as a programmer. So, yeah, I would say that really it was the comfort of mm-hmm. the business.
Mm. I think a lot of people overlook that, how much we absorb and pick up in that journey, even as young, you know, teens and even younger. In your case, even younger. You know, your phone was part of your existence from probably some of your early memories.
Yes.
And that stuff sinks in, you know, and it sinks in and shows up in strange ways sometimes, but it's also there when we need it, right? So I want to touch on a rather pivotal moment in your journey. You were online. You looked up on BizBuySell at the time. Mm-hmm. You found this entity called Carry Cases Plus.
Right.
And 3 months later, you owned it.
Yes.
Talk about that moment and that move. And what gave you the confidence to make that move and to ultimately acquire, and I believe was maybe your first acquisition, right?
It was.
Okay.
Yes. We were still a fairly small company at the time. So 98, 99, I decided to go all in. You know, we bought a building in Paterson, New Jersey, and we were trying to fill up enough business to pay for it. And basically what happened is that my sister-in-law was just graduated college, and she was really just upset and that she couldn't get a good job. And she was saying that, you know, she's not, all of her friends are lucky and they all have great jobs. They're all lucky. And I said, you know what? You need to go and you need to make your own luck. You mm-hmm. need to go out there, put yourself in a position where luck is going to find you and actively look for luck. Mm-hmm. So that's what I did. That night I went on to bizbuysell.com. I typed in foam. Okay, and it came up, Carry Cases Plus, uses foam, carrying cases, which we have, you know, had a little bit of experience in, not much. And that next day, I called up the broker. I was like, let's try to make this happen. I didn't know anything. I had a consultant to try to help me, a business, not really a broker, but a consultant, to try to do my first acquisition. We did it. We did the first acquisition, and the day after I bought it, the biggest customer disappeared. So maybe my due diligence wasn't so great, but luckily it was a Connecticut company. I closed it up and I brought it into our factory, and so I think really that also helped, right? So the challenge or the exposure I had wasn't so much. We were able mm-hmm. to get out of the lease, bring everything in. We didn't bring the employees over from Connecticut into New Jersey. So even though I lost, you know, probably a third of the business, I was able to weather it. And then it allowed me to go forward onto my journey and make a success out of Carry Cases Plus, and that turned into my case builder.
Yeah. So that, if you looked back at that first acquisition, it sounds like that definitely, even though you had some turbulence in, you know, the acquisition or post-acquisition, mm-hmm. it somewhat reshaped the trajectory of the company, didn't it?
100%. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah, so the real thing there was that we were, and still do, packaging foam. So mm-hmm. packaging foam for computers, end caps, you know, protection, mm-hmm. that kind of thing. Foam is big and bulky, and it's very regional. So you're not going to buy packaging foam from a New Jersey company if you're in Texas. There's plenty of foam companies in Texas that you can buy the big and bulky foam, okay?
Okay. But
cases and foam, completely different value add, okay? Mm. So becoming an expert in the case business and being able to provide solutions there, we're now worldwide, not just U.S., but that allowed us to open up and really change the business. So when we, you know, did this latest acquisition, one of our acquisitions last year of a small foam company here in Paterson, that they just stayed, you know, for 30 years a foam company, and they stayed, you know, relatively the same for mm-hmm. 30 years. And then, you know, we became a case and foam company, and boom, you know, straight up.
Mm. So at that point, your dad was out of the business, right?
Correct.
So did you and he still talk business, talk shop? Like, did you tell him kind of what you were thinking? And I'm just curious what his You know, I'm kind of going in this new direction, and you know, curious what was his advice or feedback or thoughts on the matter?
Absolutely. So my dad is very interesting. We did. We brought him. We flew him up in '99 when we were going to buy the building, and then because he was already out in '97, you know, retire. Is this a good idea, Dad? Should we buy this building, and so on and so forth? So he definitely helped us and gave us the stamp of approval. But my dad's funny. He will even to this day, kind of not really, you know, praise or say things that are very nice. So. His thing was that he, when he was running the business, he said he had a lot of profit. He was able to close on at 2 o'clock and go to the pool and go swimming every day with his one employee. And he was very proud of that. So, you know, later on through these years, and I would say, hey, Dad, did you see I just got a whatever, $1 million order. He said, yes, but how much is profit? How much? When I ran the business, I went to the pool every Tuesday. I said, yes. You had a lot of profit, Dad. So over the years, he would always ask. He would come in every day. He would come in every day, probably till about 2015. Sometimes he'd bring me lunch. He lived right in the next town over. And he would always walk around the factory, take a walk, say hello to every single employee. And now we're close to 50 employees, so he would know all their names back in the day. He was... I wouldn't really talk strategy. I would kind of do what I felt was right, yet we would talk business in general.
Mm-hmm. So, maybe when he asked about the $1 million, Dad, I can't really talk. I'm trying to negotiate a double diamond, lots of moguls. Call you back in about 15.
There you go. Exactly.
So, I would think that first acquisition also gave you... you kind of cut your teeth on acquisitions as a mode of growth. And over the last year, as I understand it, you've completed two additional acquisitions, one in foam fabrication, another in soft case manufacturing.
Yes.
Talk about those and what did you see as the strategic gaps those particular acquisitions filled?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. So over the course of the last about 10 years, we went on a very big manufacturing equipment modernization process. So, we also got help from the state of New Jersey with one of their manufacturing grants, which has been wonderful. And I had purchased a machine, a 220-ton die-cutting machine, which is really great for packaging foam, not as great for cases and foam.
Okay.
So I had that machine, and for years I had been talking to the previous owner of that company, and the time was right. You know, he was ready, and I had some machinery that would be perfect for this that needed some work. And we've always done, foam fabrication and packaging foam. We just leaned more into cases. So now we've kind of, brought up the packaging foam business with that acquisition. Foam is foam, and it was very helpful to us to have a business to acquire that really did not... It was not a from scratch, There was the learning curve was pretty much almost zero, so really good. The other business, which we just acquired, Alpac Custom Cases. So that one's a bit harder, That one is we had been providing foam to that customer who would make the soft cases or salesman sample cases, soft bags, cutting and sewing in Passaic, New Jersey, which is right near us. And we would provide the foam for them, among other vendors. And so for about 20 years, so again, we've been talking to him for a while when he was ready, that we would love to be able to make the cases as well. So every case that we make currently is pretty much, or sell currently, is a hard shell plastic case.
Yep.
And, the size is the size that the mold is. And this allows us to create any custom size, any form factor for, anything that you need to carry. And we're doing that in Passaic, and I'm learning all about sewing, and I had to buy thread today, all kinds of new stuff. We just acquired it 2 months ago. So, but that journey's going nicely. It's going nicely because I could see already that it solves a niche because it's short run. If you want a custom bag with embroidered logo on it with a custom piece of foam, you're going to go to China if you want 10,000 of them or overseas, but if you want 20 or 15 or 50, you just can't get it. Nobody makes it really. So that's where we shine.
And just for the benefit of our listeners, when it comes to a hard surface case versus a soft, is it application driven? Is it like, you know, like these applications are more are suitable for softies for a more of a sturdier case, or is it sometimes optional? Whereas you can put a customer in either based on the nature of whatever is being carried. You know what I'm saying? Like.
Absolutely. And yeah, it's a little bit of all of those. So, you know, the hard case has a rugged industrial look. Pelican case is the brand leader. SKB, we have our own brand, Doro. It's got a look, it's got a feel, it's crush proof. You can drive a tank over it, and it has that industrial feel. So people sometimes know that, and they'll gravitate towards that. But they're heavy, big plastic cases. And they're limited on the sizes that you can make. Now, the soft case, because it's fabric, we could stiffen it up if we need to. You're not going to drive a truck over it, but if it's going in the back of your car, you know, it's going to perform very well. So we do a lot of salesman sample cases with the soft bags, because that's really where it shines. Door and window and lighting salespeople, they could come into your house, unzip your beautiful soft bag, and inside is everything that they need to sell a window or a door, that kind of thing.
Cool. Okay. So it's all based on application, it sounds like, and how it's going to be used and the level of durability, I guess, right?
Correct. Exactly.
So recently when we were talking before this episode, you were also talking about exploring opportunities that could expand the company's reach even further, this time toward the West Coast. Talk about that and what's kind of exciting you about this next potential chapter, Wagons West, if you will.
Absolutely. Now, that is a much bigger risk than anything I've done before, because it's out on the West Coast. So you're talking about time difference, plane tickets, and everything like that. Yet, I believe that for us and what we do at my case builder, which, by the way, when we introduced we were Carry Cases Plus, and then we introduced my case builder, which is an online design software, so you can create your own custom foam in a case for your cameras, your electronics, pretty much almost anything, drones, you name it. And what we find is that we have a lot of customers, a lot of business on the West Coast. And a lot of the case companies make their cases on the West Coast. These are the hard shell cases. Mm-hmm. So in a very, very many situations, cases are made in California, West Coast, come all the way back to the East Coast. We put our foam in them, and then they go right back to the West Coast. So number one, we would be able to shave time. Obviously, shipping empty air across the country, save fuel, save the environment a little bit, save a lot of headache of that time frame, and so on and so forth. And there's a lot of business out there, and I think we could really take our business to the next level. And for us, we had the choice, acquire or build from scratch. Well, we could build from scratch, get machinery, people, and so on and so forth. But yet, I've now done this. Will be my fourth acquisition after my one, two, three. Yeah. And I really feel that it's a good way. There's challenges, but it's a good way to grow your footprint and your business.
Absolutely.
And expertise, yes.
And with the footprint already somewhat, I don't want to say fully baked in, but already present, you know, I'm sure that mitigates some of the risk in making
that move. Absolutely. Yep.
So Steve, when companies like yours grow through acquisition, certainly the brand often has to evolve as well as the company evolves and gets bigger. So how are you thinking about the brand My Case Builder as the organization has become bigger and potentially is about to become even bigger if this acquisition, this latest one, manifests, becoming bigger, maybe a little bit more complex? How are you thinking about the brand you're establishing as the company expands?
It's a challenge, I'll tell you. I think every company hits these sort of points of challenge, trouble, issues that run. You know, when we started, everything went through me, right? And then you hire people and it goes through them, and then sometimes that's go through me. And then you try to put an organization in place, you know, with departments and that with people who can handle things. And then you still, though, you creak along when you grow too fast, right? And so we were, the last 2 years or so, really struggling. We became went behind on our orders. You know, we're now caught up. We had an employee who stole $38,000 from me, so we had that issue. We had all kinds of challenges that come up when you are trying to go to the next level. Mm-hmm. You know, and brand wise, we've always prided ourselves on being on time and being an easy company to work with and, you know, having the fantastic products and so on and so forth. And we were starting to slip, be honest, you know, because when we're late on some orders, that's not the brand promise that we're giving. Okay, when we go to trade shows and we tell you that we're going to do a new project within 2-3 weeks and it takes 4 weeks, that's not delivering on that brand promise. Mm. So my goal is, obviously, as I'm doing this acquisitions, is to solve our internal struggles to get back to that brand promise. And we're probably about 90% of the way there, just to be honest, obviously. We still have room to grow, and everybody does. And every time, once we're past this kind of hurdle, I think that we'll be ready for the next, you know, however much percentage of growth, and then we'll hit something else. But yeah, so as far as the brand goes, we are trying now to do more marketing, but that's it's just not enough time in the day at a small company to do everything, and to bring on people specifically. So yeah. That's where we're going to need outside help, probably, with the marketing of the brand, yeah.
And it sounds like, and I appreciate your candor in saying, hey, you know, we're not perfect, but you know what? We're perfect at working on where we're not perfect, and we're going to get it right. And it sounds like you're going back to some of, maybe the foundational roots of, hey, we got to deliver on our promises. We got to make sure, you know, we are running in a very buttoned-up way. We're selling a quality product, and the brand means something, and it's meant something for 40 years. So it sounds like your priorities are in the right place, and being 90% there, that's pretty darn good.
Last 10% is the hard part. We're moving towards it.
Absolutely. Looking to expand geographically, especially East Coast firm looking to have West Coast presence. Obviously you're extending the brand. You're also extending some operational challenges relative to leadership, how that operation will run, who will oversee that operation. So talk a little bit about how you're thinking through some of the challenges that come into play when you're running a business that's now multi-location and no longer, I'll say, concentrated in one region.
Right, right. Well, that's, again, the good thing about an acquisition. So the leadership will stay on for 2 years, at least, hopefully. We'll figure that out. The leadership will stay on over there, and that's going to take really a lot of the pressure off of day-to-day operations. Obviously, I'm going to have to go in, and we're going to have to integrate, and we're going to have to do computer systems and so on and so forth. So I'm optimistic that everybody stays on, everybody's happy, and we're able to utilize that expertise in that part of the country, rather than me coming in and trying to recreate it from scratch, or me telling them what to do with, and I don't know the business, that kind of thing, or that region. But yeah, there's going to be challenges, yet I think that one, the geographic, hopefully won't be the biggest challenge there. I think it'll be more of the integration systems. That's always a hard time. Always hard.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But you've been through it a few times. So, I can't say it gets easier, but at least it gets more familiar, right?
That's correct.
So, switching gears a little bit to another development we referenced in the opening, your daughter, Sarah, joined the company. Third generation. Pretty remarkable. By generational standards. So talk about how she came into the business and some of the conversations that you had about that, how that manifested. Give us a little color on that, if you would.
Oh, yeah. So it wasn't part of the plan. It was definitely a nice surprise. So she went to school for cinema, and when she went to school for cinema or movie making, I said, that's great, but you need to get a business degree as well. So that it's a hard business, So so she did. She got a degree in marketing and business administration. And so when she graduated right at the pandemic 2020. So the job she had disappeared. And she did get a position remotely working for an influencer marketing company. And she worked there for a couple of years. She did great. In fact, so great that anytime somebody left the company, they just gave her that work. And then they gave the next person's work to her and the next person's work. So she was working 12, 14 hours a day. And so she was, you know, not extremely happy. And at the same time, as I was mentioning, we were slipping a little bit, right? Mm-hmm. We were starting to be a little bit too big, and some of our processes started to creak along, and some mistakes were made, and so on and so forth. So we said, you know what, Sarah, this is the time. Come work for us.
Mm-hmm.
You'll be able to not be so stressed all the time, and it'll help us, and hopefully it'll help her as well. Just a little funny thing is that, you know, she was living at our house at the time. We were about 35 minutes away from the factory. But we were also trying to convince her to move into Manhattan so she can, you know, start socializing and so on and so forth, and live the city life. So she did move into the city after she started working for us, and her 35-minute commute became a hour and 20-minute reverse commute, three trains from Manhattan all the way over to New Jersey here. Now, the thing is, the real thing is that, not to brag, she's so good that now we're giving her everything. So now if anybody leaves, we give her that at work. So when I acquired the first business, the foam company, so she came with me. She took on all those customers, put in everything into the system, really, really doing a fantastic job with that to allow that acquisition to go smoothly. And then we gave all those customers to our inside people, and now she's working on the second acquisition with me. So we were, you know, going back and forth to the sewing plant, and she's doing all that. Now, the third one in California, we'll see. We'll see if we fly her out to California. But she's been a breath of fresh air here, and it's been wonderful.
And think about the education she's getting. Oh, my goodness. To see this happening real time, firsthand, and to have a hand in it is pretty remarkable foundational work for a young person. So that's pretty cool. And that it sounds like she likes it. You know,
I think we have to take some of the workload off of her. But yes, she does. I think she does like it. Yeah.
So, and maybe too early to kind of weigh in on this, but I'll ask it anyway. Always interesting when that next generation enters a company. So what are some things, and maybe she's going to listen to this, I hope she does. What are some things that third generation should question that the second generation represented by you might be too comfortable with? What are some things where she might start to probe and ask questions to maybe press you or push you to be at your best again?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it's a good question to for her view, and it's actually kind of interesting where she told me that you know, we probably should get some younger people into the business. Computer, you know, smart and so on and so forth, not to be ageist or anything like that, but mm-hmm. So that was one thing, you know. It's as we continue, we have long-term employees. We have some employees here for 25 years, you know, mm-hmm. that we could start to a little bit, you know, creak in age, right? And mm-hmm. our ideas might not be as fresh as they once were. So she is starting to challenge me on some of that, you know, like let's get some young leadership in, let's get some new fresh thoughts in, and so on and so forth. Yeah. So yeah, that's definitely something that she's pushing.
That's great. That's great. Good for her. And I hope she continues to push because, hey, she's the future, and so is the next generation of talent that supports my case builder, right? So makes all the sense in the world. Yeah. So now looking ahead, 5 years or 10 years or whatever your horizon might allow for, what does success look like, Steve, for my case builder? Is it scale? Is it specialization? Is it brand leadership? Or is it something else? How would you categorize success if you looked out into the future?
Well, but definitely scale. I mean, I'm not looking to build it into a billion-dollar company. I wouldn't support that. But scale, I feel that I'm at a point where I can definitely grow the business many, many, many times over. Mm-hmm. And at the same time, though, I don't want to lose that that my case builder customization one at a time, really easy to work with. It used to be very hard to make one custom case for your, rifle or your gun, your camera or whatever it is. We made it easy. So I don't want to lose that market leadership, People tried to come in and copy me, and so far nobody's been successful. But one day somebody will. So yeah, success for me means keeping that market leadership in the custom foam, custom case business at a scale level where we can keep the business true to our brand promise.
Awesome. Awesome. Well said. Well said.
Thank you.
Last question. If any of our listeners wanted to connect with you or to learn more about My Case Builder, what's the best way for them to do that?
Absolutely. So 100% go onto our website at mycasebuilder.com, or one word. You can do a search on there. Our contact is there. You can look for me on LinkedIn, Steve Holland, 1L. Very important. But absolutely, and you can come to some trade shows and come by a booth, and it would be nice. We have some giveaways that we're working on, the foam giveaways, real fun stuff. So definitely go to mycasebuilder.com.
Awesome, awesome. Well, family businesses often grow through moments that seem small at the time. A late night internet search, a bold acquisition decision, or a second generation deciding to fully commit to building something bigger than was there before. Steve's story is a great reminder that building a company over decades requires both patience and the willingness to make big moves when the opportunity shows up. Again, we've been speaking with Steve Holland, president of My Case Builder, and I'm your host, Ed D'Elia, and this has been another episode of Growing Up B2B. Thanks so much for listening, and we'll see you next time. Steve, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you, Ed.
Hey, thanks so much for tuning in to Growing Up B2B. To explore more episodes and insights, visit podcast.deleonet.com. And if you've enjoyed this episode, please give us a rating or review on your podcast platform of choice. Having worked with hundreds of family-led businesses across my career, and being a second-generation leader myself, I'm on a mission to help every family business I meet achieve next-level growth for their organization. So feel free also to connect with me on LinkedIn, and let's support each other. You can also find out more about my company at DeLeaNet.com. Again, I'm your host, Ed D'Elia, and thanks so much for joining us today. Take care.